the outfits, the costume design.
Oh, yes.
I mean, everyone was stunned.
100%.
We get to see Chris Evans in a turtleneck.
Oh, sister.
Moment of silence for Chris Evans in a turtleneck.
Welcome back to Qualified-ish, the bi-weekly podcast that talks all about movies and TV shows created by qualified creators, but hosted by an unqualified lover of film. I am your host, Kira Menez. This week, I am joined by my close friend, Kira Thortson. Kira currently attends American University studying political science. Ever since we were young, Kira and I discuss films and TV, starting with the older BBC shows, Black Mirror and Sherlock. But today, we are here to discuss the popular 2019 film, Knives Out.
Okay, well, thank you, Kira, so much for joining me today on this episode. I'm so happy that you're here.
I think it's about time that I came onto the pod.
I do, too.
I have my full cup of coffee, and I'm ready to discuss.
And mind everyone who's listening, it is 6 p.m. on a Sunday night, and she's drinking coffee.
Full caffeinated coffee, everyone. This is your reminder to go check your Canvas and make sure you don't have any overdue assignments.
It is your time right now. That's true. Sunday night. Okay, well, today we're going to be talking about Knives Out, which I'm super stoked about, but I'm going to ask you some questions I ask every guest. So this first one is, what's your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show, I've bounced around a lot. I just really like comedies and sitcoms because I spend a lot of time like studying and thinking about serious things. So I like to watch things that make me happy. And one of the things that makes me the happiest is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love Andy Samberg. I love all of the writers on that show. And I love the story behind how it was created. And I just think it's a really good TV show. And it's my favorite.
Amazing. And what about your favorite movie?
Same kind of idea. My favorite movie is Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo, Mr. Leo.
Mr. Leo.
I just think it's such a good Mr. Leo. I just think it's such a good movie because it kind of gets you in, like, you're rooting for the villain, you're rooting for the bad guy, and he's just this stupid kid, but he's so clever, and you just want him to get away with it the whole time. And he's really just like that anti-hero, the embodiment of an anti-hero the whole time, and I just love it so much.
I love movies like that, where you want to root for the villain.
And my favorite thing about that movie is that you don't know how it's going to end, because if you haven't seen Catch Me If You Can, I won't spoil it for you, but he just kind of keeps going through, like, these more and more elaborate heists and ways that he can, like, skim his way into different jobs and stuff like that. And you just don't know how it's going to end, because he keeps digging himself into a deeper and deeper hole, and you're like, holy shit, how's he going to get out of this? So, highly recommend watching that movie.
Love it. Okay, and if you wish you created one film or movie or TV series, which would it be?
I thought about this a lot. I decided that I would like to recreate Friends in a better and more woke light, because it's a show that has such cultural and societal influence on, like, an entire generation. I feel like our parents, kind of in their 20s or your parents' 30s, I guess, like, there are so many cultural references that come from that show.
That's true.
I feel like if we got to recreate it, it could have done so much good for dismantling stereotypes because of its influence. If I could go back to the 90s and recreate Friends, that would be so cool.
It's so weird because once that show came out, every kid was named Emma, right? Like, because of Rachel's kid, like, all the kids, all the girls were named Emma, and I'm like, oh my god. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a good show. This is like, I don't know how to say this without sounding like I don't like the show, but, like, it's great, but it's nothing, like, revolutionary to me.
Well, I think that's the thing, is it set so many of, like, the cliche of the characters having a place to hang out. You know, that was Friends, Central Perk. That's where that kind of, not where it came from, but where it was really popularized. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in so many other things. But yeah, the thing about all the kids being named Emma, like, I have a friend named Rachel because her mom was a big fan of Rachel Green.
That.
which is just really funny to me.
Oh my god, yeah. Great. And now, moving on to Knives Out, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Came out last year. So for the people who don't know, we're going to describe the plot for you so you can get a little gist of what we're talking about, and then we'll get more into what we like and what we don't like about the film. So
there's this very high profile detective who's very much, you know, old South, and he's like, I got a thing of money slipped under my door. And he's there with the police, and they interview all the different family members. And it's all centered around the night of this old rich man's party. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That everything like goes down.
I don't know, man. Daniel Craig with a Southern accent as the detective really sets the vibe. I mean, just imagine people who haven't seen it.
I kind of wish he was British, but in the movie. And just for context, so the old white guy, his name is Harlan. And to make it better, Harlan Thrombey, which is the most obnoxious fucking name I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
And he is this like old mystery writer, kind of, you know, like Agatha Christie, Stephen King, you know, very established, whatever. And he has these kids, and they have kids. So I think there's a daughter and a son, and then there was another son, but he died, so his wife is like it as part of the family.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, how much do you like it? Let's say, give it out of 5 stars. How much do you like it, and also what do you like about it?
I like it. I would say a 4.75 out of 5 is my rating of Knives Out. I think so. When I saw it, I am not as big of a movie fan as Miss Kiramanes is, but I do very much enjoy them. And I was kind of in a slump of not really watching anything meaningful or that I enjoyed kind of this February, you know, back when we could be in movie theaters. And I watched just 3 like amazing movies in a row. I watched Parasite, I watched Lady Bird, and I watched Knives Out. So I think the culmination of just me watching those 3 really good movies just made me very excited. And I think that's why I kind of think about Knives Out in such a positive and like loving way when I think back to it.
Mm-hmm. I would give it probably like a 4.1 just because I think it's a great movie. It's really enjoyable. It's one of those movies where like it could be hit or miss because it's basically like it's shot in one place sort of thing. So it could be either really boring or really exciting depending on how it is. And I think it's a really exciting movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think like it's not something that original. Like if it were something, because it's kind of like what you were saying, like Parasite, if it was like when I watched Parasite for the first time, I was like floored. Like this was good. Like it was enjoyable, but I wouldn't say it was like a 5, which I think Parasite is a 5 for me. But I really liked it. I thought, first of all, the outfits, the costume design.
Oh, yes.
I mean, everyone was
100%.
You get to see Chris Evans in a turtleneck.
Oh, sister.
Moment of silence for Chris Evans in a turtleneck.
And my woke-ass king. Only woke kings wear turtlenecks.
Exactly. Yeah. Costume design, sound design, it's a fun little plot. Is there anything though you didn't like, or maybe something you wish like happened differently in the film?
So I thought the movie really teetered on the line of being it's not a remake of anything specific, but it's very reminiscent of Clue movies, of, you know, just old murder mystery movies. And I really enjoy that part of it because I think it was done well, and that's very enjoyable, and it's still surprising. You know, you didn't really see it coming necessarily. And there are a lot of things that we can talk about that I think the producers did to like break that mold. I do kind of wish that the police had a bigger role in the film. Like I think that Daniel Craig's character as the detective, he really took the lead, which made the movie what it is. But there were just kind of 2 cops there, and one was like there for comedic relief, and the other one just didn't really do anything. And I kind of, the whole time I was like, I feel like they could have a bigger role in this because it just kind of feels like they're taking up space. And that just bugged me. Like, it's not a big thing. It just kind of bugged me in the back of my mind when I'm watching it.
That's
what about
so
you?
Weird. Because, like, I was going to say something like that, but more broadly, like, it kind of just felt, I mean, this is not necessarily a bad thing, but I was kind of like you, it would have added more complexity to the plot, where it's like, it kind of just feels like you're playing a game. Like, the movie kind of felt like a game. Like, it didn't really feel like I was watching these people's lives at some point, except for, like, towards the end I felt it. But, like, yeah, like you said, the police, like, were they actually police? I was like, is this very Kafka-esque? I was like, is this actually happening right now? Or is this just, like, I don't know. It just felt like not a bad thing. I guess I didn't expect it, is what I'm trying to say. Is I thought it would be more legit, if that's the right way to describe it. I'm not really sure, but
yeah, like, they definitely were not winning any awards for police work. Daniel Craig really, really did all the legwork in this group project.
He did. You could tell too. You really could.
Yeah. I mean, oh, that's a really good point though that you said about it feeling like a game. That like, I didn't really know how to describe that, but I agree. Like, I think it's a really fun, you know, 2 hours and 15 minutes or whatever it is, you know, but you don't really, like, it's not supposed to be a movie where you're learning in depth about these people's lives, you know. Like, it's exciting, it's fun, you're learning a little bit that adds complexity to the story, and kind of like, oh, tell me more. But I almost think that, you know, you not knowing more makes the film better,
right?
Because there's still really that element of ambiguity that underlies the whole
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Ambiguity, Kafka-esque. Oh, okay.
Let's not get into Kafka-esque right now. This episode will be 3 hours long.
I know. Who is your favorite character, or if there's multiple characters, and why?
I mean, I think everybody's favorite character is Marta, mm-hmm. because she's just incredible. And so, okay, I have two. So I'll talk about Marta first. So the thing that I love about Marta, and for everyone who hasn't seen the movie, Marta is the housekeeper, that she knows what's going on, and she has a very close relationship with Harlan Thrombey, who is the guy who died, the old guy who died. And everyone's kind of, like, she's very much part of the family, but she's still kind of an outsider at the same time, and you don't know that much about her, so she's a really interesting character. But what makes her the most interesting character, I think, if you look at this in, like, a deeper way, is that she yaks every time she lies. So she cannot lie. She literally cannot lie, which is so disgusting and hilarious. But, you know, it makes for a really interesting added element that I think makes this movie so awesome, because, you know, in other mystery movies, everyone kind of is just morally ambiguous, you know, they're kind of in a moral gray area, like, oh, maybe they had something to do with it, maybe they didn't. Marta, you can totally see, she's just such a kind and genuine person who wants to help people. She's a nurse, you know, you find out that her mom is an illegal immigrant, so she's really caring for, like, her mom and her sister, and she literally cannot lie. So she acts as this human lie detector, basically, throughout the whole thing, and she's helping Daniel Craig's character find out what happened, even though she knows what happened, basically. Well, you think that she knows what happened.
That's like low-key the tea. Yeah.
Right, that's the tea. And I think we, like, stop listening now if we're going to go watch this movie, because we're going to talk about, like, what actually happened. But
yeah.
Even, like, at the end, we can talk about that later, but at the end, you know, you still see how good of a person she is, which, like, I love her so much for that, you know?
I know. What happens, like, I guess we'll talk about it soon, but, like, I like what happens at the end with her, because I agree. My favorite character, actually, I don't know if I have multiple, but, like, I just love, I think her name's Joni. Is that her name? Just the one really obnoxious woman who, like, steals money from Harlan. She's
yeah,
just
okay,
so annoying.
She's the wife of the son who died.
Right.
And she's just kind of there. And you can totally tell that the other sister and the brother do not like this woman.
Oh, yeah.
And she's very much, she's like, she's this white, like, yoga teacher vibe, you know, hippie pants, but also, you know, diamond earrings. And her daughter is, she could be literally any college student in America. Like, she, it's the girl, it's Hannah Baker from 13 Reasons Why. And
I have something to say about that after.
She dresses, like, super cute. Yeah, she dresses super cute. She has, like, a big head, which is so, it's a jewel, I think. It's so hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And she like, very much likes Marta, but she also, like, they allude to the fact that she goes to a small liberal arts women's college and studies like feminist studies and philosophy, and they all make fun of her. So she's basically the stereotypical, you know. I didn't like that, actually. That's another thing that I didn't like. I did not like how they made her out to be, because I feel like it was minimizing the impact and like influence of, you know, young women in the movie. But whatever, it's okay. So that's like that side of the family. But yeah, Kira's character that she just talked about, Joni, is just this obnoxious woman who's like, ah, yes, my chakras, but then also she's like stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the old rich white guy, who's so just funny. Like a nice person and who's like paying for her daughter's education. She's like double check, like she, and it wasn't it like he paid for her education and then she also requested like a double and said, oh, I'll take the money and then I'll like pay for,
yes,
the
that's what it was
school. I think that's what it was, yeah. And I mean, Smith College, $82,000 a year, so she was making some shmoney.
Oh, she was. But you brought up whatever her name is. I have the character list pulled up. Her name's Meg, which is the girl from 13 Reasons Why. Here's the other thing, is that I was watching this film, and within the first 5 minutes, and I had no idea what to expect, because it was just one of those, like, oh, I heard it was good, I'm going to watch it. Didn't read up on it, nothing. Which is what I usually do if I want to watch something. First 5 minutes, Meg hits her jewel. I'm like, why is she hitting her jewel on camera? Like what does this add to the plot? Like, what were they talking about that necessary for her to hit her jewel? I was like, I don't know what is going on here, but I don't know what this is adding to her character. It didn't add anything. And I was like, oh, I don't know how this film is gonna be. I was like, what is the point of that? I thought it was funny. But yeah, I love Joni. I just think she's comic relief without being purposefully comical. Like, she is supposed to be comical, but like not like because she's smart about it, like because she's an idiot and because she just loves her money. She's like one of those. It's very stereotypical. And honestly, there's a lot of things that we'll talk about that show a lot of like underlying themes about like class,
right? But yeah, absolutely. I was just gonna say that she really juxtaposes the other two siblings, because she is, I think that's really smart that how they did this, because it could have been a lot more basic if it was just like, oh, there's these three siblings, right, and they all, you know, are Harlan's kids, and then they have their kids. But because, so she, again, reminder that she's Harlan's daughter-in-law, so she was married to a son of his that died, and by doing that, like, she is so different from the other two kids. Like, the other two kids, so one of them, he like manages the publishing company of the of the person's books, of his mystery books, and the girl manages like something with real estate that her dad basically funded and got set up with her husband. So it's just really interesting because they're very polished, like East Coast pretentious kind of vibes, like old money. And Joni, the hippie woman, is so like new money. It's just a really interesting contrast between the two types of people. Yes. But they both are like rich and benefiting off of their white privilege all the time.
And then, is there one scene that stood out to you?
Well, I think the ending scene is so iconic, where she's holding her mug as she, but we can talk about that in a minute. But the other one that I really thought about, so, okay, basically, there is this scene where Chris Evans' character starts attacking people, and there's this amazing chair thrown made out of knives, or no, there's a chair, and then behind it, there's a circle of knives, and it was like a prop, it was kind of just explained away, but you're like, oh, it's a mystery writer, he can have whatever he wants in the house, and every time their family members are being interviewed by the detectives, they're sitting perfectly centered right in front of this circle of knives. And it is just incredible because, you know, it is almost ridiculous, but it still works. And it's just so amazing. And then during this fight scene with Chris Evans, he like lunges at Marta and he's ready to stab her in front of this circle of knives. So this whole thing, you know, it's kind of framing the people as villains almost, but at the same time you're like, oh well, you know, they're still good people. But just that the simplicity of the prop and the where it's placed, and yet how central it is to like the characterization of every person in the film is just amazing, and I love it so much.
I didn't really think about it like that, but that makes a lot of sense, period. we were starting to talk a little bit about class and stuff like that, but my favorite scene is when they're all talking about immigrants together, like immigration policies and stuff, their drinks and whatever. There. And then before, but I think before that was when, who was it? What's his name? Christopher, the older guy. I forgot his name. The one who was like immigrants.
Which one?
And then someone was like, oh, that's from Hamilton. Ha ha ha. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Okay. I think the son that manages the publishing company.
That's who it is.
He said that. So I think the kind of vibe that we were getting. So this is the other thing that I had written down. The way that this movie got like spot on the diversity of the family dynamic is just so good, because I know that so many people have had really divided family dinners and things where they go and, you know, like some relatives voted for Trump and stuff. It's so spot on, because you have, you know, like, so the funny thing is that each member of the family says that Marta is from a different Latin American country.
That's like, true.
None of them know, and they're all like, oh, Marta, like, she's part of the family, we love her so much.
She's from
Brazil. She's from, yeah, it's so weird.
Love, but then it's like, I feel like, especially at the end, but that's different, but like, at that point when they were having that discussion, they have like this weird like love for her, but also like kind of jealousy, but also kind of like prejudice against her. It's super weird. It's a super weird dynamic, because they don't like hate her.
Not to drop the buzzword, but I think they're very paternalistic towards her.
Mm-hmm, they are.
I think there's kind of, it's like twofold, right? So I think all of them, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is the daughter who owns the real estate company. Mm-hmm. She's so good in the movie. She's so good. And she kind of talks to Daniel Craig about how you have to like play her dad's game to like communicate with him. And games are another like key thing in this movie. You know, like him and Harlan and Marta played this game called Go. Jamie Lee Curtis and Harlan, I love how we're like using the character names and then the actor names.
Jamie Lee Curtis's
time.
Name is Linda, and I don't know what Daniel
Linda.
Name is.
Jamie Lee Curtis and Harlan, they like write letters in invisible ink. Like, it's very game centered, which is interesting, because you said that like the whole thing felt like a game, and it's very Clue reminiscent, so that's interesting. But I think they're all kind of jealous of the relationship that Marta and Harlan have, because Marta's not trying to get anything out of Harlan. Like, she's genuinely just there. Like, she appreciates the job. She is very much a companion to him. And all of them have something that they need from Harlan. You know, like, I'm sure there's underlying love between them and their dad, but with Marta and Harlan, it's so much more authentic, their relationship. And I think they're jealous of that, which is something you can like very much pick up on in the tension that is between like the kids and Marta.
Mm-hmm. What were your first thoughts at the start of the film? Like, just general thoughts.
Okay, this sounds really weird, but I got kind of like the opposite of Wes Anderson vibes. So there's just this one opening scene. So, okay, Wes Anderson, he does these like still,
oh my God,
shots, right?
That makes so, you know, much sense.
He does these like still shots of just like little scenes, and there's one that's just of the house, and it's just, I was like, wait, what the hell's going on? Like, is this Wes Anderson? And nothing else really in the movie like stood out to me like that. It was just one of the first shots of and the last shot where it's just the house, and there's so much going on in the picture, but there's no motion, there's no talking, there's nothing, and you can like, it just allows the viewer to get so much out of the movie before it even starts. So that was, as soon as the movie started, the soundtrack was amazing, and then I immediately started noticing things about the set design. And Kira mentioned that there isn't really a lot of movement around in the movie, like it's basically based out of this one house, but it's just this gorgeous, like, I don't know architecture, but I don't want to say Victorian,
it's so
but
funny. Yeah,
very old architecture, like this very, you know, storied house, stone, traditional, you know, it's just really pretty. And I think they did a really good job of making it kind of feel like a modernized version of like a mystery house. So those were my first two kind of thoughts, like when the movie started.
I had the same like thought where it was like it's a very modernized mystery sort of thing. I very much got Clue vibes just off the bat.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard not to,
and it's definitely like obviously it's purposeful. Like it's definitely a mystery.
Yeah.
And like not in a weird way, but just the way it was formatted in the beginning when the detective and the police officers, like, they're all examining every person, it feels very much like an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, because they take one person, right, they seat them in the seat, and they put their name on the
bottom. In front of the knives.
Yeah. And they just talk it through. And, like, the angle just reminds me of that. And, like, not in a bad way. Like, I thought it was interesting because they're going through all these people. And the beginning scene with Marta and Harlan, I'm like, what's going on? You know, like, it really gets your thoughts going. Like,
that's so funny.
Like, yeah, but that was, like, the first thing that I thought of just because of the way it was formatted. Again, I love the set design, everything like that. But that was just something that I thought was funny. Yeah.
That is really funny. I think... I was kind of thinking about the best way to describe the interview scenes, and I think you're right. It's kind of like a combination between a police interrogation and like one of what do you call it? It's like from The Office, like the headshots, the talking heads, like yes. A talking head from The Office combined with a police interrogation, mm-hmm. because all of the family members, you can hear their personal needs coming out in the conversation.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, it's like family drama. You know, you're trying to figure out the mystery. Like, remember also, someone's dead through all of this. Someone's dead, and they're trying to figure out who it is.
And by the way, they all seem like fine. Like, I think
right. They all seem normal. Like nobody.
They're all like prettied up, and they're all like ready to like have this conversation, and like it just, and they're all talking about things that Harlan did for them, and it's just like. What? Yeah, anyways.
Right.
Who were you suspicious of after you found out that Harlan died and they were, like, searching?
Honestly, I wasn't sure. I kind of thought that it would maybe be the other housekeeper, mm-hmm. Just because she was someone that was really left in the background. And I know that movies a lot of times, like, fall back on that kind of stereotype of just pulling someone out that you know nothing about. And I was like, oh god, are they gonna like pull that tired old thing out, you know, or this random person, like, did. But I was actually really happy with, you know, how they kind of ended mm-hmm. that, like, with who actually killed him.
Yeah. I thought it was gonna be Ranson.
Really?
Just because he was just being an ass, like a real ass in every field. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. But then at the same time, I thought the same thing where it was like, it's too on the forefront. Like, I feel like it has to be someone that they haven't mentioned, or maybe that just seemed too innocent, kind of like Marta. But I didn't think it was Marta. I felt like that was also too obvious. So yeah, and even as the story was going, I had no clue. Like, I was like, where is this going? Because I would go between like Linda for some reason, because I thought maybe she was like too nice, too put together to like Ransom, like back and forth. But then I was like, I don't know, I'm just gonna watch the movie at this point, just see what happens, because I have no idea.
Right.
Yeah,
but I was really happy that happened. So like at the beginning, I think I was like, oh well, maybe they're just gonna go with that, like Marta killed him and they're gonna blame her, and then she's gonna get, even though he killed himself technically, mm-hmm. So just to summarize, Marta is giving Harlan like medications at night, and she accidentally gives him the opposite dosages. So of like, she's supposed to give him, say, like 3 of morphine and 10 of like another drug. And she accidentally gives him like 10 of morphine and 3 of the drug. Mm-hmm. So she switched them on accident. She's like, oh my God, you're going to die. Like, I need to call the ambulance. And he's like, no, like your mother will get deported, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, okay, go, like, you're going to do this. And he basically helps her try and get away with it. And then he slits his throat. And that's how he's found. And so I kind of was like, oh, they're going to say that Marta killed him. Mm-hmm. And then she's going to get blamed, even though that's not like really what happened. But then what I was really happy with is that Daniel Craig stuck up for Marta the entire time and really tried to like build this trust with her, and like, because he saw that she had like blood on her shoe and that she was acting weird, but he was like, I don't think this is something that she would do, and I want to know like the whole story, which is something that I thought really broke the mold of kind of a traditional crime story, if you know what I mean.
The next thing I was going to ask is what aspect of the film you liked the most? I feel like we covered a lot of things, but is there one thing that really stood out? Like, between the soundtrack, the design, the script, the characters, what did you like the most?
I think it was just a really good job of combining, like, a classic kind of movie with pop culture. Like, it didn't feel clumsy, other than the jewel thing. It felt really well incorporated. You know, like, there were references to Hamilton, to other things that made it make sense that it was happening in 2019, 2020, but it didn't feel like old people were writing this movie and they're like, how can we make it appealing to people under the age of 65?
Right. Yes. I would say that, I kind of mentioned this before, but I just really appreciate how it's like a one location film. I feel like those are so hard to pull off. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be really easy to be a boring film, but there were, because of the different, I feel like it did a really good job at going in depth into the characters and like us understanding the complexities of each character and kind of understanding mm-hmm. the dynamic. And there were always new things coming up. Like, just like there were always new things coming up, and that's what made it so good, is that this was a one set, one location movie, but there were always new things coming up, which made it so, I feel like, enjoyable and also kind of like game-like, like we were talking about. And which was 100% intentional, and they did a good job with that. Yeah,
I agree.
So we talked a little bit about this, but what are some underlying themes of the movie?
I think one of the ones that we kind of mentioned was the like complex family dynamic, mm-hmm. which I think is such a universal experience for a lot of, especially like Americans with our political climate. But, you know, that's a really just universal experience, is having like a lot of different experiences that you're all united by being a family, but that doesn't make the problems that you have go away. And then I think the other one is like the power of tragedy to bring people mm-hmm. together.
Power of tragedy.
I would
say that's like probably the main one, because they don't really mesh well together, those people. You can tell like they're all kind of like in their own thing, they're doing their own thing, they don't really want to be there, and they're also like not really upset by it, like on the surface at least. And then the other thing is like class mm-hmm. status, immigration status. Like, the last scene was super symbolic, and like you said with the knives, that was also symbolic. But I would say the last mm-hmm. scene, when Marta is holding the cup, and I think she's on a balcony, right? And she's looking down at all of the people, literally the entire family. And like, this is the ending, sorry guys, but like, spoiler. In Harlan's will, everything is given to Marta. Literally.
Literally everything. Like the company, the house, the money, everything.
And everyone up until this point is like, oh, we're going to go to the will reading. Like, so excited.
Let's touch on that first. Yes, so the whole time they think that the will's going to get split up between everybody, right? Like, the son is going to get control of the publishing company. He can finally do what he wants with it. The daughter's going to get the real estate company. She can like finally make her father proud. You know, Joni's going to get her money so she can, I don't know, open a yoga studio and microdose and ketamine. Like, she wants to do all, you know, everyone has their own self-interests, and they really think that they're going to get to pursue those with the inheritance. And then the will reading comes, and they're all very comfortable. They're like a little nervous because they think, oh, maybe my like dad pulled a fast one. And the whole time they're like, Marta, like, we want you to know you're taken care of. We're going to get some money. Like, but like, you know, they're very, again, paternalistic, like, oh, of course, like, we're being such good people, but, you know, and she's the one who's had the best connection with their father for the past, like, 5 years,
right?
And he was, he liked her the most, so they're kind of coming in now, swooping in now that it's, like, convenient for them to be their dad's kids. And I just think that that, like, is such an interesting dynamic, because she's like, oh, thank you. Like, I really, you know, and she's not expecting anything. You say, like, what happens in the will, but she's as surprised as all of them when the will gets read.
Yeah, it's just, like, everyone's up until this point, everyone's pretty nice to each other because they know that the will's going to be read. You know, they don't want anything messy. They know that they have a lot of money coming towards them. And they're kind of like, again, like we were talking about before, like they're nice to Marta, but they're not particularly like, oh my God, like I'll take you in as my own. They're kind of just like, she's there. She helps Harlan, you know, like this is upsetting, but like at the same time, like they feel like they're the most important people in his life. So the will gets read and it's just like thing after thing. It's like thing after thing, Marta, Marta, Marta. And they're all looking at her like she came up with the will. Like they're all looking at her like she did something. She must have done something. There's things that we don't know about Marta. Like all of a sudden they switched from being like kind of jealous at her because of the relationship she had with Harlan to like being pissed at her because they thought that immediately it was her issue, which like you can't write someone else's will. That's the first thing. And mm-hmm. also, it would take so much money and so much effort for all of the family to go to court for this and like try and prove that Harlan messed up somehow, some way. Like it was clear because of his placement of like everything going to her that it was purposeful. So there must have been something happening.
Marta runs out of the house.
Yeah, Marta is floored because she's like obviously not expecting this, probably expecting nothing at all because like she was just there to help him. She's just there because she likes it. She enjoys talking to him. She was there to make more money for her own family. Like, and I just thought that the end scene was so meaningful because it's literally mm-hmm. just Marta holding, I think it's, is it his mug, Harlan?
Yeah, so she's given, I don't know, I think the first time you see the mug is, like, she's given it after like she discovers Harlan dead and that's they come in and yep. she's like holding it, you know, they're comforting her, they give her like tea, she's drinking it, and then so it's just for everyone who doesn't know, it says my house, my rules, my coffee, and it's like one of those, you know, joke mugs, but it is like so, you know, because at the end she's holding it kind of with two hands, you know, like you do, and so the things that are showing are just my house, my rules, so it's just really cool and just a really like funky and interesting prop that the film yeah. uses.
Yeah, and it's also like it's just roles reversed in some ways. Like she's looking down at them, not like she's a bad person, but like just in terms of like class and stuff, like it's just completely switched. And they honestly, all the family had no expectation of that. And I feel like that is really shown through like all the characters' attachment to the father, like if you want to call it attachment. It's more just like financial burden or whatever. Like Joni is always relying on her father, right? And all the characters feel the same way, and so they expected nothing less. So seeing that switch and like seeing that, like mm-hmm. again, kind of like what Christopher said in the beginning and what they were talking about with immigrants, I think it really shows like karma will take you down.
So, well, yeah. that's the other thing I wanted to touch on, is I'm like, the other kind of big theme is karma, like taking mm-hmm. place. Yeah. You know, like these kids are kind of assholes and now they're getting their asses handed to them. But I think the most interesting thing is like Marta smiles at the end. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of fun because it, like, she's been this angel the whole time. Like she's been this amazing figure that we're all supposed to like love, and you do love her, you're rooting for her, but she kind of smiles, which is a little bit evil because, you know, these, if you look at it from the kids' perspectives, if you could very easily like victimize them, but she's kind of like, oh, like how they got what's coming to them. So she's appreciating the work of karma, but I just think that's kind of funny because, you know, if you truly were a good person, would you be happy at the suffering of others? Just like that's a discussion right. for another time, but I thought that like added complexity to her character.
Yeah, and kind of another thing I wanted to add, because like she's an immigrant, she was like an aide for Harlan. Do you think that if Marta were a person of color, the viewer would view the film differently, or do you think there would be disputes about it? Because sometimes, you know, people complain about representation in film or how characters are portrayed based on their race. So do you think like that would have been like an issue?
So I think that there's kind of a stereotype, right, of like Latin American immigrants working as housekeepers or cooks or like quote unquote low level working positions. So I kind of feel like she falls into that token minority role as as an immigrant, as a Latin American immigrant, I think that that could have happened. And that the interesting thing is that that stereotyping is not done by Harlan, or and it's not done by Daniel Craig, who are the two most That's important right. white men in power. Like, they truly treat her as a person. You know, they actually treat her just as a human being. The issue of, like, her legal status and her, like, her race come into play when the kids are there, and they are, like, the ones that are younger. You know, there's that whole discourse about our generation being more woke, but even Meg, like, falls into it. Meg's the younger character. She falls into kind of, like, asking Marta to give up the money and stuff like that. So it's definitely very interesting to kind of see those roles reverse a little bit, and how the different characters treat the, like, quote-unquote token character. But I think if we had seen, like, Marta's character be Black or a different race, I would be curious to see, like, what stereotypes would be cast onto her.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I just had that thought because when I was looking at this film and some analysis of it, a lot of things they were talking about is just, like, the contrast between Marta and the other characters and how they treat her and how a lot of it is, like, very passive aggressive. So I was curious because I feel like people will take Marta and just be like, oh, she's white passing. Except, like, maybe she has, like, an accent. That was just something that went through my mind. Do you think that Knives Out has the potential to be a classic?
You know, I think it does. And I think that that comes from the fact that there aren't really other good mystery movies. There's a reason that, like, Clue and everything affiliated have become classics. And I think that this has the potential to do the same thing, because there aren't really other movies that are making this attempt to be, like, good quality recreations or new ideas surrounding that kind of old mystery vibe.
I don't know. I mean, I definitely think it has the potential, but I don't know. It's like, I think it will be known as a good film, and I think people will go back to it, but I don't think it will stand out as much as the other films, like Parasite. Mm. Like, this might be fun to rewatch with, like, groups of people or people who haven't seen it. Like, it's definitely not like, oh, I won't rewatch it. But, like, I feel like there are other films that I would probably classify as classics before this one. Especially because
I could definitely see it being, like, if I have kids, I'll be like, oh my gosh, guys, we're going to have a family movie night. Like, we're going to watch something from, like, when mom and dad were kids.
Mm-hmm. I think people will definitely keep watching it. And I think it's original to some extent, but it's not something, like, I feel like we always talk about how it's, like, a game, like Clue, like, if we have to compare it to stuff like that, I don't know how much it would be a classic with that stuff, but it's still a good point. Film. Yeah.
I think it's better than Clue. It's more entertaining for sure.
Oh yeah. I agree with that. If you were a character in Knives Out, who do you identify with and why?
Well, I actually identify with the character that is Chris Evans's wardrobe.
Oh,
I think we dress agree. Very similarly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I identify with. Yeah, we do. I like Meg. I think we're very similar. Like, we're both college students. We're both privileged. We both want to do good things, but definitely are a little bit ignorant when it comes to understanding, like, how privileged we are. But, like, I think Meg is a good person, and I think she's just very influenced by, like, her mom and by the threat of, like, her college tuition being taken away, which mm-hmm. are definitely things that I could relate to. So I think that's the person that I'm, like, most similar to.
Well, I would just identify with, there's this one scene, someone was sneaking out of the house. I think it might have been Meg, I don't know, where, like, they're, like, literally, I think it was Meg, because they were leaving the house, and they were so nervous that someone was going to catch them. And there's this old lady just sitting and not moving and just looking at
her. That's you.
That is me. And she's just like, you just know she's a bad bitch. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have to do anything. Who was it? Was it Meg?
No, it was, well, at first it was Chris Evans. It was
Ransom,
and it was Marta two different times.
That's right.
Yeah, this old ass lady. She's Harlan's mom. She's mm-hmm. like ancient.
Right.
She's just muttering, like, but that ends up telling us a lot about, like, what happens and who done it.
Yes, exactly. And why don't we just, we haven't even said that. Who done it? Tell me.
Okay, so basically what happened was so Marta thinks that she injects the wrong medicine into Harlan, and he slits his throat. And so what kind of comes out of everything is we find out that Harlan has cut all of his kids off. He kind of calls them into the office. He cuts them off. He says things that upset them one by one. And they're all pissed. They're all pissed. So you kind of find out more and more into the movie that they are all mad at Harlan. So they could all have killed him. So what we find out is that, so later on in the scene that Kira and I were talking about with the knives where Chris Evans starts attacking people, Daniel Craig puts the two bottles of medicine down on the table and asks Marta, can you hand me the morphine? And she picks it up and she gives it to him. And he had switched to the labels and proved that Marta could pick them up and she knew which one they were based on their weight and how good of a nurse she was, how good of a caretaker she was. Basically demonstrating that A, Marta didn't kill Harlan, and B, that she's just a really good person and a really good caretaker and like doesn't deserve the shit that she was, the shit and abuse that she was being given. So everyone's kind of like, shit, did Harlan kill himself then? Because, and the answer is yeah, that she actually gave him the correct doses of drugs and he slit his throat because he thought that she was going to be blamed for his murder. So then we're like, oh, but did someone switch the labels on, so then we find out, oh, someone switched the labels on the medicine bottles. And it turns out that it was Ransom, it was Chris Evans, because he was going to be cut off. And he knew that the will all being given to Marta would be overturned if she had killed Harlan because of like a law, right? Like they're like, oh, if the person who killed Harlan is, you know, the one in the will benefiting from all this, then all the money does not go to them. So he finds that out. He switches the bottles. She switches them back, gives him the correct dosage. He slits his throat. It actually was suicide.
We're going to go through some Letterboxd reviews because some of them are so funny. And I'll share my screen and we can read them out loud to everyone and Sounds good. Them with everything. I think we should read Ian's right here.
In the wake of the very loud and toxic public response to Star Wars 7, The Last Jedi, Knives Out is a reminder that Rian Johnson makes what can only be universally agreed upon as the good move. The good moves. An actual analysis of a film like this is nearly impossible.
Sorry, pause. He means the good movies. This is how he speaks.
Oh. I thought he was making like the good moves. You know, like the good moves.
Ian, we love you.
Okay, Ian. Okay, he just says like you can't analyze it without spoiling. As cliche as it may be to say, but the twists and turns do truly throw you into a roller coaster of second guessing. The relevant undertones of the dynamics between rich and white and their attitudes towards minorities and the working class never gets preachy or too political. Johnson is incredibly poignant in his filmmaking here, with every scene feeling perfectly interwoven. I agree, Ian. Good job. Is it a deep, profound masterpiece? No. Is it an incredibly enjoyable, fun experience that is written, acted, and directed brilliantly? Well, does Benoit Blanc have a glorious southern draw? The answer is ye. Fuck ye and fuck Ransom.
Exactly, and he gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. All right, now yep. To some public reviews. We're not going to say their names, but 4 out of 5 stars. A movie as good as its sweaters, in parentheses, the sweaters are excellent.
That is so true. The sweaters are so good in this movie. I really want some. I like, know. If Harry Styles met...
That's so facts.
If Harry Styles... sweaters were made by East Coast Barney's New York stores.
So true. This one, okay, 4 out of 5 stars.
4 out of 5 stars. Hannah Baker hits the jewel not even 5 minutes in. What did we say?
Over 4,000 likes on that review. Love it.
Yup. Period.
This is kind of funny. 5 out of 5 stars. Toni Collette, who plays Joni, takes on her bravest role to date in the form of Gwyneth Paltrow. Also, I don't know how to pronounce her name. I don't want to butcher it, but that's the woman who plays...
Ana de Armas.
Yeah, that's the woman who
Ana
plays...
Ana de Armas, Marta.
That's it. That's the review, which I agree. I liked it, too.
Period. Okay, 4.5 stars. Knives? Out. Gems? Uncut. Portrait of a Lady? On fire. Hotel? Zhivago.
So funny. That one, yeah. So good.
Okay, everybody, here's the guest star of this podcast, my father, James Thornton. Please give your review of... Wait, let me disconnect my earbuds. Please rate... what's... Not,
I was going to say Uncut Gems. Please rate Uncut Gems on a scale of 1 to 5 stars.
Tell us.
Knives Out or Uncut Gems?
Knives Out.
All right, well, Knives Out I found just delightful. The plot was fun. It was a whodunit up until the end. Mm-hmm. It was a joy to hear the crazy accent that...
Right?
that Daniel Craig tried to affect there. That was kind of crazy. And it was delightful. All the little twists and turns and the grandmother, the characters were kind of amazing. The setting was super atmospheric. I loved just being in that zone. The house was, I felt like I was there. Mm-hmm. And I was cheering for our heroine until the end. And then I was just, and I'm not sure if we're allowed to do spoilers here.
Okay, spoil.
Yes. When it turned out that it was her greater goodness that kind of saved her at the end, and she did the right thing. I mean, come on, how awesome that all came together. It was beautiful, and I give it, I don't know what our rating system is, five stars, 10 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
I really enjoyed it. It was awesome.
Love it. Thank you for that. It's exactly what was going on in my mind.
Kira always says that my dad and I are the same person, because that's literally what I just, what I,
it's exactly what she just said. Last question that I ask every guest. Okay. Is there one thing or a couple things you want to see more of in TV series and film? This can be the industry, this can be plot, characters, types of films, anything.
Yeah, I think two things are really important to me. So first of all, just as, you know, a human being, I think diversity is really important, and we've had enough of white men and white women with the same old tired stereotypes, you know. And I think we need to see our television and our film needs to represent what the world looks like today. And the world is obviously endlessly diverse, and there are so many human stories that can be told. And we also have seen with Parasite, with Moonlight, with stories of like young female empowerment, with Lady Bird, you know, that shit sells. If the film industry is listening, that shit sells.
Exactly. So,
from a capitalist standpoint, there's literally no reason not to. And then from just a good person standpoint, more stories deserve to be told. There's no end to them. There's no limit. And also, it is so good to watch stories that look like you and look like, you know, you're. So for us, like, the biggest thing is seeing powerful women, because, you know, as young women, there are a lot of, you know, men have all the power. They're the presidents, they're the scientists, they're the doctors and things like that. And then when you see movies like, you know, Hidden Figures, which I know is problematic, but when you see movies like Legally Blonde, you're like, oh, I can do that shit too, because she did it. Even if it's a character, even if it's a pretend story, it makes it easier to visualize. And I think the power of visualization and the power of positive thought really is something that, like, motivates everybody. And that's obviously so important for people, especially women, especially people of color, people with trauma, people who come from, like, unstable backgrounds. I think that that's really important to see that, you know, you can overcome and help create a better world that is more representative for all people. And then the other thing is that, as someone who's, like, a casual movie and TV watcher, like, that's literally what movie and TV is made for, is to watch it and be entertained and be, like, enjoy yourself. I would love to exist in a space that has so much less gatekeeping. I think that there is a lot of gatekeeping in film and TV, and I know that it comes from a place of passion, but I think it's really, really harmful to be told that your opinion is wrong if you have not seen certain classic movies, quote unquote, you know, like the ones that are thrown around a lot, which are good. They're good movies. They are, like, Fight Club, Pulp Fiction. Yeah, so I think there's two sides, right? Like, there's the gatekeeping kind of generally, which I think is a lot of time it's directed towards women, because a lot of times female interests are just inherently invalidated by their male counterparts for no fucking reason at all, other than the fact that they want to, like, maintain dominance and maintain a sense of superiority. So I think there's that, and then also just the annoyingness. Like, it's like when you're wearing a band T-shirt and someone walks up to you and they're like, name five of their songs. Like, no. I don't have to justify my enjoyment of things or my consumption of things to literally anybody. This is the entertainment industry. If I don't want to watch a movie from, like, the year 1901, I don't have to. Like, it probably wasn't very good. The first movie ever of just the train driving. Like, I'm not gonna watch that. Some film bro is gonna watch that and be like, that's so deep.
So,
like,
crazy, yeah.
I'm like, no, but I've seen a train go. That's not the point. But just don't gatekeep shit. Let people enjoy things. And I think it's okay for you to enjoy things in a casual way. You know, like, you don't have to avidly watch and know every single thing about something that you're watching. You can just watch it. Like, sometimes you can just watch something and be head empty, no thoughts.
Read empty, know? No thoughts, head enjoying empty. The vibes, you
the
know?
The world is a horrible place, and it's totally fine to watch things that make you happy.
Exactly. She couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, seriously. Well, thank you so much. I loved this conversation. A lot of memorable things. Thank you to James Thornton for joining us for a split second.
I thought this was going to be a family episode.
I know. Well, here we go, and I'll have to have Lisa on sometime soon anyways. Peace out.